So, how long we got? Where's our destination today?
I don't know. We got 20 miles to cover. Let's talk some movies. God, people don't know how to drive.
Are we going to get lunch on this gig? You see anything good recently?
Not really. We got a little time, Steve. Let's do a podcast.
Sounds good. All right, welcome to Film Driven. I'm Steve Haskin.
I'm Andre Shane. We're back driving.
Yeah.
Talking about movies. And, of course, we're doing our annual. It's a tradition now, Steve.
Yeah, a little Oscars preview.
Oscar preview, that's right. And you excited, Steve? You excited for the Oscars this year?
I don't know. I'm not super excited, but I do always enjoy the Oscars. This show is a little different. In the past, we've kind of combined our, like, year-in-review, Oscar preview, all one show, but we already did our year-in-review. We kind of gave our thoughts on our favorite movies.
That's right, and so few of them are represented in this Academy Award.
Yeah. As a refresher, you know, for anybody who's new, while I often disagree with who wins Oscars, I love the Oscars. I think it's a fun show. I like to have some drinks and make fun of it. There's a particular logic to who gets nominated for Oscars, who wins, and I actually kind of enjoy that for the most part. There's people who win Oscars, and whether it's Best Picture or an acting category, where later on you might be like, what? I can't believe that person won. But during a given year with the weird whose time it is Oscar logic, it makes sense. I always enjoy trying to figure out how the that vague, nebulous group known as the Academy, what they're thinking.
Yes, well, I mean, they're actually the Best Picture nominees, I have to be honest, are pretty decent, I think, this year. I think there's some really, really good films, and some of the more interesting films of the year have been represented. So that's a good sign for me.
Yeah, I mean, my personal three favorite films of the year were Whiplash, Birdman, and Boyhood, all three of which are nominated.
So. Absolutely, and I like those pictures as well, and Grand Budapest Hotel is on there
favorite.
As well. In fact, there's really only two of the ten that I did not see, and the ones I did not see are The Imitation Game, which I heard great things about, and The Theory of Everything, two of these very British type.
I haven't seen either one of those movies. Here's my thing, Andre. Those movies are... I'm sick of those movies. I'm sick of these kind of middle-brow, kind of prestigious, but not very adventurous, non-daring movies. These movies are just like... some other movies that have won, like The King's Speech, which actually did win Best Picture.
Did win, yes.
Chocolat, things like that. Movies that play at, like, supposed art house theaters, except, you know, like, you know, your mom might go see that movie and say, oh, that's nice. And I'm just bored to death of these movies. Every year there's another one. Usually they are British.
Yeah, they usually are British. And, you know, a lot of times they have a vibe of sort of being the kind of movie that used to be, like, aired on PBS as part of the Masterpiece Theater umbrella, you know?
Yeah.
And now, you know, Masterpiece Theater just basically just shows Downton Abbey, so, you know, so that entire genre has slipped into the cinema, and every year, you know, a couple of them are, you know, bestowed with all kinds of awards. I don't want to be unfair to those films. I might enjoy them. I've heard good things about both of them from various people, but I don't want to see them. I'm not particularly itching to run to the multiplex to see The Imitation Game.
Sorry. I've got no qualms about being unfair to these movies, to be honest. I'm ready to be unfair to them. I'm ready to, like, The King's Speech, I kind of refuse to see almost as my own personal political stand of, like, you know what? I'm not going to go see the goddamn King's Speech. I hear it's tasteful and lovely, and I don't know. I'm asleep already just talking about it. Also, The Imitation Game, I have heard it's very good, and I do like Benedict Cumberbatch. That said, similar to American Sniper, one of the most interesting things about the person profiled in The Imitation Game is, in fact, not in the movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is an interesting thing. I mean, well, the guy, Alan Turing, had an interesting life, and particularly interesting like towards the end of his life.
That's not
what the movie's about. And, you know, it's based on a stage play, which incidentally I starred in back in college. I just remembered that a couple of months ago. I was stunned that Benedict and I played the same role, essentially. I think he's probably better than I was. I couldn't really get the accent straight.
Are you making this up?
I'm not making this up at all, Steve. It's totally
You blocked this out.
Absolutely true.
I can't believe this hasn't come up
I was the...
Alan Turing?
I played Alan Turing in a little theatrical showcase back in college of Imitation Game. Amazing.
All right, well, here's what I say. I'd say if the Imitation Game wins Best Picture, we have to shoot a scene of the Imitation Game starring you as Alan Turing.
All right. Well, if our vast audience expresses interest in seeing something like that, I'd certainly be game.
We got to find a Keira Knightley or something, right? Maybe I can play the...
Maybe you could play Keira Knightley.
I'm not offering that. I'll play Matthew Good's role.
Okay.
How about that?
All right, man. That sounds like a deal.
we'll find out, but only
if it wins.
Only if it wins.
So, and I have to say, Steve, that is highly unlikely in this batch of nominees that
we'll play the odds, but I've got you agreeing to it on
a
tape here.
Sounds good. I'll recreate my critically acclaimed turn.
The Imitation Game. Man, I had no idea.
I'm not shaving for that, though, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I don't think you should.
You know, A Theory of Everything has a bit of a momentum happening, I feel, especially with Eddie Redmayne's performance. Haven't seen it, can't really talk about it, but, you know, it's always cool to see an up-and-coming young actor doing interesting work.
Yeah, it's. I haven't seen it. I have to say, for the most part, biopics don't work. And I understand why people make them, and I also want to see some of them. It's just... it's hard to have it just stand alone as a movie, to make a credible movie. And I did see Selma, and I will say the actor who played Martin Luther King, he is a British guy whose last name I can't pronounce off the top of my head, Olawando or something. He did a really good job with the fact that, you know, the tendency, like a hammy actor playing Martin Luther King, would really kind of be pompous with it. You know, like carry himself like he's Jesus walking around and probably be orating even when he's ordering a sandwich. And this guy did a good job about, you know, so you want to underplay it a little, but at the same time, you know, Martin Luther King was, you know, one of the more renowned speech givers in history.
Yeah.
And, you know, a man who, when he stood at a podium, captivated millions of people. So you don't want to act like he's not a charismatic person.
Yeah.
And I thought he walked the line pretty good. He was not nominated, but these biopics, it's hard work. The same with Eddie Redmayne in The Theory of Everything. You know, you're playing a very famous person with a, you know, really intense disability. You don't want to make it all about that.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, Stephen Hawking's disability is a rather large factor in a portrayal of Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, but also his disability is so extreme that we really have no idea. I mean, Stephen Hawking has the mechanical voice and barely has control over his facial features. So, like, we have no idea what he's actually like. So it's hard for us to gauge the accuracy of Eddie Redmayne's performance because I have nothing to base it on. Ironically, there was a made-for-TV movie about the same subject starring Benedict Cumberbatch as Stephen Hawking. So it's a... did you know this?
No. Did you play Stephen Hawking in college, too?
I did not play Stephen Hawking.
Okay.
But...
actually, you know what? I think I did know that Benedict Cumberbatch did play...
That's right. No, but it's just kind of interesting because they're such different physical types. I'd say Eddie Redmayne kind of looks more like Hawking, actually.
The Best Actor category is pretty strong this year, I feel. We've got Eddie Redmayne, The Theory of Everything, Michael Keaton in Birdman. He gives a very good Michael Keaton performance.
Yes.
It just feels like it's been a while.
Right.
So we have Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game, as we said. Steve Carell in Foxcatcher and Steve Carell's makeup with an assist.
That's right.
And Bradley Cooper in American Sniper. We kind of talked a bit about that.
It's hard to judge who's going to win. I think the front runners at this point are obviously Michael Keaton and Eddie Redmayne. I mean, based on the previous shows, that's what it's down to. I think all of the performances are excellent. I have to say, I don't think Steve Carell is going to win because I'm not 100% sure his performance was the lead of the film. I mean, this confuses me a little bit. You know, I mean, his character, clearly a key character in the film, and I don't know if he's the bigger star in the film compared to the other guys that are in it. But, you know, the lead of that film is Channing Tatum. I mean, he's the main character. The movie's about him. So I'm not sure how Steve Carell really fits into the lead actor category here, Steve.
Well, this is one of those bizarre Oscar things that has to do with, I don't know if there's a rule that you can only have one, especially in the leads. I think in supporting you can have more than one. But in the lead performance, it seems to be a rule there can only be one per film. Like, there's one lead per film.
That's right.
So then the studios, who are trying to get nominations for their movies, they kind of have to make a choice. What are they pushing for?
Yeah.
And maybe because he got better press, better reviews, the studios clearly pushed Steve Carell in the best actor category. And I guess you could say it paid off. Because there he is. He's nominated.
I'm nominated.
With you. I mean, this has long been a factor of, like, what's a lead, what's a supporting performance. You know, Anthony Hopkins won for The Silence of the Lambs, and, you know, he's on screen for, like, 1/4 of the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Calling him the lead is a bit of a stretch. That one was, you know, was a bit different just because there wasn't necessarily a male lead in that particular film.
There was a female protagonist.
They considered his performance as such a crucial central piece of that movie that they nominated him. And he won.
Right.
But I'm with you. Steve Carell gives, it's kind of a small role, and he's very good. I mean, the best thing I can say about him is he's a mesmerizing character in that movie.
Yeah.
I am, like, fascinated when he comes on screen.
Yeah, I love him. I love the way he talks. I actually, you know, I've said for a while now that I think Steve Carell is I like Steve Carell as a dramatic actor much more than I like Steve Carell as a comedic actor. And I want to see him do more of that kind of stuff. I thought he was great in it. But, you know, the lead actor thing, it just confuses me. And I think when it's this off the mark, like in this case, you know, I'm going to stick with my theory. Steve Carell is not the lead actor of Foxcatcher. He's not. And it's going to be one of the reasons he's not going to get the Best Actor Academy Award is because I think most people, when looking at that category, are going to say, well, he's not the friggin' lead of this movie. And so, and I think that's going to kind of quickly disqualify him from most people's consideration for the top award.
Sure.
From another category, J.K. Simmons, who's in the supporting actor category, J.K. Simmons is much more deserving of the lead actor just based on screen time and what his character represented in the story than he is of a supporting actor, because he wasn't really a supporting. That movie was a duet between two main characters.
Whiplash, exactly. It's like that movie doesn't have a female lead. That movie has two male leads.
Yeah, and they're antagonists.
Yes.
That's it.
It's very much the character Andrew, the student. Like, it's his story. So based on that criteria, he's the lead. But Simmons is on screen, you know, almost as much as he is.
Well, yeah, it's he is much more what you would consider the lead in Whiplash than Carell is, quote unquote, the lead in Foxcatcher.
Sure.
That's my opinion. But great performance, fun, you know, very creepy, very, you know, very balanced, very interesting, and very convincingly insane.
Oh, yeah. No, you sense that, and what's kind of, I like about that movie, you know, we've discussed there's something off with Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
But one of the things I do like about that movie is that I think it does present successfully, is that that character seems to be diagnosably messed up in some way.
Sure.
But as a very rich, insulated person, he's not diagnosed, you know, and the movie doesn't spell out, like, you don't know if that guy's on the autism spectrum, or he just seems like a messed up human, that he doesn't have his sexuality worked out right, he's got some mother issues, he's not acclimated to society, and you kind of feel that, you know, maybe with a good therapist that guy could get some help, but he grows up in an environment where you kind of just get the picture that his rich family is like, there's nothing wrong with him. And so he doesn't get any help, and he becomes this bizarre, damaged, middle-aged man who's used to doing whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and not understanding, you know, how that fits into the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's a very interesting performance, and I think it's, you know, and I actually would like to watch that movie again just to kind of get a better handle on it, you know, just what exactly he's doing technically in it. So, you know, definitely worthy of nomination of some sort. I just don't think that it belongs in the Best Actor category.
Yeah. We should also give a shout-out to, you know, who knew when we were watching Wet Hot American Summer and The Wedding Crashers that at someday we'd say Bradley Cooper, 3-time Best Actor nominee, and a deserving one, right?
Yeah, very deserving. I thought Bradley Cooper was great in American Sniper. Honestly, I've always been a little bit on the fence with him, and I, you know, and it's funny because, you know, you mentioned those early films, but I'd also say, you know, I used to watch the show Alias a lot, and he was a supporting character on that show, and, you know, based on that, not that he was bad in it, but based on that, I would have never guessed that this would be a 3-time Academy Award nominee already at his young age. But in American Sniper, I tell you, he won me over in that one, honestly, because before he was always Bradley Cooper and he was solid as Bradley Cooper. In this movie, he's so un-Bradley Cooper-like, it's almost jarring, you know? He's really off, and you know, to his credit, he does it without the use of heavy prosthetics. You know,
yeah.
He basically grew a beard and worked out a lot, you know. And he doesn't look like Chris Kyle, the character he plays, but he really, really sold me on his performance. I thought he's absolutely outstanding. The nomination for him is well-deserved. I don't think he's going to win.
I don't think
for
so.
For a variety
either.
Of
yeah.
reasons. I mean, mainly, there's a couple of things in play here with American Sniper. He is not going to win this year, but I think his performance is an eye-opener for a lot of people because now I think they could see him in very, very different kind of character roles that they didn't see him in before.
Yeah.
Been a good year for him, you know, between Rocket Raccoon and
that's right.
and Chris Kyle,
which I mean,
very,
you know,
cool.
not to oversell it, but I thought he was great as Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, it was a great voice performance.
It was a great voice performance, and didn't sound overly like Bradley Cooper. Like it
yeah.
sounded. I mean, I'm sure he was sold. You know, he was cast for the star power. But if you watch that movie, you just like Rocket's voice. It's not. I don't know, it's not necessarily identifiable as Bradley Cooper unless you knew that going in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. He's not just talking through the movie. He's giving an absolutely solid, you know, layered performance
sure.
of that character. So, again, very good, absolutely, you know, deserving of the nomination, undeniably. I mean, if I had to give it, if it was between Steve Carell and him, I'd give it to him. If I was the sole deciding voice in the Academy. But I'm not, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm just not. So Cumberbatch, we talked about it. We not having seen the film, we can't judge it. I'm sure he's great.
Sure.
Michael Keaton, what are your feelings on Keaton?
I keep reading he's the front runner, though it seems more of a legacy performance or a legacy award. And I have to
a
say,
legacy for what? Steve?
A lot of times those things don't win. Well, Michael Keaton is one of those guys that, and this I actually am amused by, that this is kind of a comedy thing that. You know, in the 80s, Michael Keaton gave us a lot of really entertaining comedic performances, or like a serious performance with a little comedy, or sometimes Michael Keaton is one of the kings of, you know, like comedy with an edge. You know, like a guy, like, his entire film career seems like you're watching a funny alcoholic who you're laughing at him, but at the same time, like, you know, he might, you know, things could take a turn 10 minutes from now and he'd be trying to punch you. And and all respect to Michael Keaton, who I think probably did have some
kind of volatile. Yeah. There was a volatility to Michael Keaton. I'm going to go on record and say I love Michael Keaton. I remember as a kid, you know, the first thing I remember seeing him in was a movie called Night Shift.
Sure.
With Henry Winkler. I thought he was just phenomenal. I've never seen him before, and he was just like, bam, amazing. Amazing performance. But, you know, the rest of his career, I always felt like he was like the second choice to, like, Bill Murray.
That's an interesting
thought, and to some
thought,
extent,
yeah.
the second choice to Tom Hanks as well.
I mean,
I thought that that's sort of where he existed, and he had a good energy, and he could act, and he had a good screen presence, and then he became Batman. And I remember just, you know, liking Michael Keaton, thinking, what a ridiculous casting choice for Batman. I mean, I'm still not down with a Michael Keaton Batman, even though his performance is fine in those movies. But I still think it never really rose above the basic miscasting for that role. But
Michael Keaton's one of those guys, if you picture in your head Michael Keaton, like just his face at rest. And my picture is, you picture Michael Keaton with his mouth open, kind of sneering at you. Like, that to me is like, when I think of, like, what's Michael Keaton look like? And you picture this guy with his mouth open, like he's about to say, well, that's fucking stupid. Anyway, for Birdman, I loved him in Birdman. I wasn't necessarily blown away, like, wow, I've never seen Michael Keaton like this before. I don't necessarily feel like, oh, compared to the shit of Mr. Mom or whatever, this is way better. I just think it's, Michael Keaton had a weird pause where it seemed like he disappeared, but if you go through his IMDb page, you find out he was working.
Yeah.
He just stopped being the star of movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And now he's the star of a movie, and people are kind of reminded, like, you know what? I like Michael Keaton.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it is. And I don't think that kind of vibe wins you awards, in all honesty. I mean, I may be wrong. I think there's a very, very good chance Michael Keaton may win. But what you said earlier about sort of a legacy award, I mean, I just question the legacy. Like,
yeah.
Michael Keaton made some decent movies, okay? He wasn't like turkeys, but he wasn't like unbelievable. I mean, we're not talking about like Ralph Fiennes or the Anthony Hopkins here. We're talking about a guy who worked within a certain pocket, who had kind of star quality of his own and his own thing, you know. But you know, would you call him a transformative actor? Would you call him a versatile actor? I wouldn't, and I don't think he really does anything in Birdman that's beyond that. But he is excellent in the film.
Well, the other thing he has going for him, which Birdman as a film has too, is, you know, people have been talking a lot. If you haven't seen Birdman, you know, he plays this character that was the star of a superhero franchise, and everybody's kind of playing up, like, oh, just like Michael Keaton. Keaton was Batman. That said, the character in Birdman made his entire career on playing this Birdman superhero. He made three movies, and it kind of acts like his entire career is attributed to these Birdman movies.
Right.
That is not the Michael Keaton story. I mean, Michael Keaton was a big star before he was cast in the Batman movies.
Right.
And while he was the first Batman, I don't know if there's anybody alive who thinks of, like, those two Batman movies are, like, all of Michael Keaton's career. I mean, he had a huge career before that.
Michael Keaton is not as defined by Batman,
as Riggins is by Birdman.
Right, right.
What Birdman does have going for it, which probably will appeal to a lot of people in the Academy, is Birdman has a lot about an aging actor desperately trying to stay relevant and to prove that he should be taken seriously and he doesn't want the world to forget about him. Now, that is something I can imagine a lot of people voting for these awards can identify with.
Yeah, I think that's going to resonate with a lot of people. And also, you know, Hollywood loves showbiz movies.
Sure
does. You know, they love it. They love to award actors playing actors. It's a whole thing. You know, it's this whole, like, Hollywood circle jerk that happens with a lot of movies that even tangentially have to do with show business. Like Shakespeare in Love was not really about Shakespeare. It was about Hollywood, you know? And it's this sort of similar thing with Birdman, except Birdman is kind of a little bit sharper, you know?
Yeah,
It's a little bit of a critique on Hollywood, much more than the love letter that Shakespeare in
Love. But the critique is subtle enough that, you know, it's not the player.
Right.
Which Hollywood
it's not as heavy-handed, but I mean the player is meant to be heavy-handed, whereas this movie is meant to be subtle, and it's also meant to be a little more vague about what it's trying to say about a lot of different stuff. And, you know, Birdman is an intelligent film, and it does actually have a lot to say about a lot of different stuff. So, you know, I don't know whether Birdman will get rewarded with a Best Picture, but Keaton may get Best Actor you know, as a way to sort of reward Birdman, yeah. which is, you know, certainly a great film.
I'm ashamed to say that of the Best Actress nominees, I have seen literally one performance out of the five nominees.
Yeah.
The only one I have seen is Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl. I will just real briefly on that. I think she's deserving. I think that's a crazy role to play because it's a crazy character to imagine that as one person. And I think she nails it. Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl are the opposite of Michael Keaton and Batman. I think those roles are cast expertly. Because you just look at Rosamund Pike, and she's right on the border of, like, do I find her attractive, or do I find her, like, entitled and smug?
Impulsive.
You know, that's right. She's just, she hits that pocket, and she nails it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the casting in that movie is probably one of the most interesting aspects of the film. You know,
yeah.
I think the film is fairly trashy. We talked about it before, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But she is a bit of a revelation in that to me as well, because I've always found her to be extremely vapid. I mean, she's a beautiful woman. There's no question about it. She looks great on camera. But as an actress, I've always found her to be kind of a cutout, you know, cardboard cutout to some extent in most of the stuff I've seen her in. You know, she's very, very cold, and I don't see a lot of inner life there as an actor. And in this movie, again, she was a bit of a revelation to me. She, you know, she kind of made me realize that she's a lot better than I gave her credit for before. Or maybe Fincher just dragged the performance out of her that was on that level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Fincher's legendary for, you know, insane amounts of takes, and some actors, mm-hmm. it drives them crazy. But that said, you know, the performances in Fincher films are pretty much pretty solid.
He gets great
board.
Performances, and you know, and his whole theory, like if you've ever heard him talk about it, was that, you know, I don't do multiple takes because I'm indecisive, or I don't do multiple takes because I love to do multiple takes. I do multiple takes because I want to get actors to a point where they are sort of free to really reveal themselves. And usually that does not come on take one or take two. It will often come on take 20. And that's his theory. And, you know, I'm not going to argue with it. It works very well for him.
He's got great results.
And she's great. But like yourself, you know, this is a good list. My favorite aspect, and what I'm referring to is, of course, the Best Actress list. My favorite aspect of this list is there is no Meryl Streep on it, because I was getting a little bit tired.
I'm afraid, though, you'll have to just take a gander over at the supporting actress category.
I got you. I know they snuck her into the supporting actress, and next year they'll probably put her in for Best Special Effect or something like that. But it's really, really, I mean, I just feel there's a breath of fresh air that we can all inhale, knowing that Meryl Streep is not going to knee-jerkedly get the fucking statue every single time she does anything on film.
Yeah.
Again, I don't mind her in supporting actress category. I don't think she's going to win that either this year. But it's good not to have her in the lead actress category. All the actresses here, you got Marion Cotillard, you got Felicity Jones, who I've never seen before, so I don't know anything about her. Julianne Moore is always wonderful, of course. And Reese Witherspoon, I think, has many, many more awards ahead of her in the future.
Already has a Best Actress Award, I believe. Yeah.
That's true, and more coming. I think she's really, really terrific.
I want to talk a bit, now this is strange because I've not seen the movie, but I want to talk just a minute about Julianne Moore and Still Alice, because this is one of the things that's starting to bug me. Okay, so every year there's some performance where everybody says it's amazing, but then they say that the movie in which this performance occurs is really lame. And I'm tired of this. Like, do you remember that Felicity Huffman played, like, a transgender person in some movie? Yeah, you notice I said some movie?
Yeah.
And I don't want to hear about these movies that come out in December. And, like, everything I've heard about Still Alice is that, you know, people say Julianne Moore's great, which I can believe. I mean, frankly, Julianne Moore is a fabulous actress. The fact that she hasn't won anything seems kind of crazy. Because she's great in everything. She can do comedy. She can do drama. I mean, she's a favorite of mine. I'm sure she's great. I don't think, like, if you were giving letter grades, I have yet to see a review of Still Alice that's above, like, a C+. So why do I want...
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of this horrible movie, then? I don't... Because I want to like a movie. I don't want to just be like, oh, well, you know... The movie's lame, but the costumes are fabulous.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, not having seen the film, I can't really judge it. I think I have read a review of it that was above a C, honestly, Steve. But, a lot of times that kind of stuff is going to happen. You know, when you have a movie that revolves around a big star, a lot of times the star and the performance will be better than the overall film. I think that's kind of an inevitable side effects to getting great actors, you know.
And I guess you can argue it's not Julianne Moore's fault.
No, it's certainly not her fault. She might win. Isn't she
the front runner? Oh yeah, people think she's going to win.
Yeah, I think she might very well win, and it's well deserved on her part. I don't know if I'm as big a fan of hers as you are, but she's a fine actor and can certainly do a lot of stuff and has done a lot of great work, you know, her entire career, you know, since the time she was really young and really green, you know. So, more power to her. And, if she wins, I will be pleased for her. Now, the supporting actor category, the next category, that's to me is kind of the opposite of the supporting actress category because I've seen every one of these performances.
Yeah, and the supporting actor category is a remarkably strong category.
Yes.
I almost feel bad because it's an embarrassment of riches who are all going to lose to J.K. Simmons.
Yes.
Who is very good, but
I hope they lose to J.K. Simmons because I do think he actually gives the best performance.
I'll tell you what, if you're making an Oscar poll, do not bet against J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's one of those guys who's delivered such incredible work on both television and film in supporting parts for so many years. I mean, he's like one of those MVPs. You put him in the movie and, you know, he's going to elevate the whole thing. Like, every time he'll be on screen, you'll be remembering those scenes as your favorite scenes in the film. And he's been doing that kind of stuff for, like, arguably 20 years now, you know. So, he's well-deserved. He's fantastic in Whiplash, absolutely fantastic. But all the other performances are great, like you said.
Well, the last thing I'll say about Simmons is he's got a great combo of, you know, as you said, a great career. It's a very showy performance. I don't mean that negatively. I just mean, you know, the actual role requires a lot of big, dramatic scenes.
Yes.
Like, when you watch the clip of his performance on Oscar night, if you haven't seen the movie, you'll be like, oh, what's that? And the other thing, which is kind of a behind-the-scenes Oscar thing, you know, all these people, when they get nominated, the studios, you know, if you win this award, it means money. So they shuffle out the actors and the directors to kind of make the rounds. And, you know, in Hollywood around this time of year, there's a lot of, like, brunches and parties and photo ops, and your availability and your attitude to these things does matter. Like, last year when Alfonso Cuarón won for Gravity, one of the things I remember reading about is he was going to all the shindigs and was very friendly, and everyone loved him. Mm-hmm. And J.K. Simmons, I've heard, has been making the rounds, and as you could probably imagine from his less shouty roles, you know, just a very lovely, charming man.
Yeah.
If you were thinking about giving him the award anyway, it certainly doesn't help that this shouting kind of horrible villain off camera is this extremely sweet middle-aged guy who's just been putting in solid work. He's in his 50s. He might even be 60.
He's been around for a long time. The guy's paid his dues. And the one thing I have to just say about J.K. Simmons generally is that he has an incredible ability to be both extremely intimidating and somehow lovable. It's a weird thing that he does. Very few actors have that capability, and he's got it in spades, man. And you could absolutely loathe him in one scene and still kind of be charmed by him in a weird way.
Yeah, that's why he's great for the role in Whiplash, because even sometimes when he's super harsh, he still has these moments where you're like, I can see why the students would want to please him. Rather than just thinking, oh, this guy's an asshole, he seems like some dad that you just, like, if I can just do this two things, I can win him over.
That's right. He has that quality, and it's really, really rare, and I don't really know how he does it. And he doesn't whip that out in every single film. I mean, some films do not require it. But when you look at his, like, most memorable performances, like in this film and, you know, in the Spider-Man series where, you know, clearly he was stealing every scene he was in. And again, it was that balance. You know, he was lovable and yet he was hateable at the same time. And the very first thing I remember seeing him in was on a TV show called Oz, an HBO show about prison, where he played the head of the Aryan Brotherhood. A very, very evil character, Steve. I don't know if you watched that show.
I haven't, but I know he was on that.
He was incredibly evil on that show, but he still was lovable. You were with that character, and you couldn't take your eyes off of him. And again, that quality, he had it then, he's got it now, he is going to get it. But I will say, a very strong category, like you said, Mark Ruffalo was great in Foxcatcher.
He was my favorite of the Foxcatcher performances. He's one of my favorite working actors right now. He's always at least good. If you like Mark Ruffalo, though, this is some good Ruffalo.
Yeah, some of his best. I mean, it's transformative. He's not using some of the tricks we've seen him use and some other stuff. It's cool. It's a cool performance, very down to earth. He's got that scene, you know. There's every movie has a scene that really pops out. And he has a scene where he's conducting an on-camera interview, right?
Yeah.
The producer is asking him, essentially feeding him lines, trying to get
him to
say
stuff. Yeah, they want
him to
say something nice about John DuPont, Steve Carell's character.
That's right. And that's just a great scene because you really see that conflict. You know, he wants to please, he wants to be a team player, but he just can't bring himself to say these words. And, you know, we see that kind of stuff occasionally in our work, and it cracks me up, and he really nails it. And you know, well-deserving of a nomination. For me, like the secondary performance, if J.K. Simmons doesn't get it, I would love to see Edward Norton get it because Edward Norton and Birdman, I thought, gave the best performance in the film, hands down, and he's just great. I mean, he's just this volatile, totally believable. Everything about him just worked. He's both funny and kind of scary at the same time. I mean, it's just great. I love his character in that film.
You know, sometimes people win Best Supporting Actor or Actress, and they don't have a lot of scenes or, you know, not a lot of screen time. Mm-hmm. Now, Edward Norton has a decent amount of screen time, Birdman, but... Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about some of the people who've won in the past, like, say, Judi Dench in Shakespeare in Love or Renee Zellweger in Cold Mountain, is that, to me, a really great supporting performance is sometimes, you know, an actor and a character comes into the movie, and every time they're in a scene, it's just supercharged. And, you know, they might steal the scene, they might just contribute to it, but, like, you're just aware when that actor comes in. And it adds a fresh dimension to the movie.
Right.
And Edward Norton absolutely does that in Birdman.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is the wild card in every sense, in that literally every scene he's in, you don't know how his character's going to behave.
Right.
And it's fascinating. I mean, you know, Birdman is an extremely energetic movie with all the camera movement, I think, really works to its advantage. And Edward Norton is just fabulous in that. It's also one of the times... I feel like it's been a while since we've seen Edward Norton be funny. He's, by all accounts, a very serious guy, and he takes acting very seriously, and, you know, supposed to be kind of a difficult person to work with sometimes, but he can be very funny and charming. I mean, even in something like Fight Club, you know, a lot of his performance is hilarious.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
He's really funny in Birdman.
All right, he's an awesome actor, and, you know, I mean, he can do a lot of different stuff. And again, I just really loved what he brought to Birdman. I mean, he's not one of those guys that pops into anybody's head as like, he's my favorite actor is Edward Norton. I don't know very few people say that, but man, I tell you, when Edward Norton is like firing at all cylinders, is pretty exciting. I mean, there was a reason why they were like calling him the best actor of his generation. I mean, it's kind of true, I think, for him in many ways. So that's exciting. Duvall for The Judge.
That's the one I haven't seen. So is there any? Does
I saw
give
that
you,
on a plane.
Does it give you anything?
You know what, man? Duvall is great. He's great in everything he does. He's not going to win because he doesn't have the, you know, the groundswell of support for him. The film did not do particularly well. It's not a particularly great film. It's a little bit, you know, by the numbers, kind of family drama and blah, blah, blah. But he's great. He's always great. You know, he's been great going back to the mid-60s. He just does not give bad performances. And, you know, putting him in there is like a good nod to a long career.
Yeah, and Duvall's the, I mean, it's been this way probably for 20 years or more, but he's almost the poster guy for me of, like, the old dude who doesn't give a fuck. You know what I'm like? I mean, I'm not saying he doesn't try in his performances. I mean, in terms of everything else around it, Duvall really gives off the air of, like, you know, look, I'll concentrate on the acting, but anything else, you know, I give a shit. I don't care if you think I look old, if you think I'm grumpy, what I could care less about any of that.
Yeah, yeah, he does give off that vibe. But on the other hand, from what I hear, he is not quite the crotchety old guy that a lot of his contemporaries are. And I'm going to point a finger directly at, like, Gene Hackman. I think those two guys can kind of interchange roles to some extent. Hackman's retired, of course, officially, but you know, between the two of them, like, I think
you'd rather have lunch with Duvall.
Well, I think Duvall is the nicer one. I think everybody, you know, kind of enjoys working with him a little bit more than they enjoy working with Gene Hackman, who is just kind of a mean old dude.
Yeah,
and he was a mean old dude when he was 35.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, I'm not comparing those guys specifically, not saying who's better, but you know, Duvall is an old pro, and he gives 100% every time, you know, he hits the screen, and, you know, worthy of a nomination, not going to win.
And Ethan Hawke, you know, we talked about him in Boyhood when we kind of did our year in review, so I don't know if we really need to dwell, but Ethan Hawke, he's great in Boyhood.
He's great in Boyhood. I love the fact that he got nominated, and good for him. I don't think he's going to win either, but, you know.
Yeah. Now, someone who may win from Boyhood, the kind of front runner of the supporting actress, is Patricia Arquette. And I would love to see her win.
Yeah,
I mean, not
me too.
Only was she fabulous in that, but, you know, a couple reviews pointed out correctly that from a certain angle, you could almost call Boyhood motherhood.
Yeah, like absolutely. Or parenthood.
Yeah.
But, although there is a movie called that already.
Well, yeah. But her arc is pretty interesting in that film.
Yeah.
And she's fabulous in it, as we discussed before, that, you know, neither one of us is, we're not long-standing Patricia Arquette fans, but, you know, when you're good, you're good.
Well, she's not super versatile. That's her problem. I don't think you could put Patricia Arquette into any movie and expect a, you know, transformation into a character, you know? What you get out of Patricia Arquette, if she's, you know, in the right place and everything sort of in position, is you can get a very, very truthful, emotional performance from her that feels real, and that's really what acting's all about to a large extent, as far as I'm concerned. And she totally delivers that in Boyhood, and I am rooting for her to win. This is also the category that has Meryl Streep in it. So as long as Meryl Streep loses, and I'm not saying this as a hater of Meryl Streep.
No,
I happen to think Meryl Streep is probably the greatest pound-for-pound actor working in cinema, maybe of all time.
Meryl Streep is really great, but yes,
I am tired of the accolades. I'm just tired of everything she does getting nominated for the Academy Award. I don't think her performances are on that level, and I think they need to kind of back off on her for a little while, give her a little bit of a break. She might be the first person to agree with me on that.
I don't know. She seems, every time I see Meryl Streep accepting an award, she seems not that embarrassed about it and seems quite content to take all trophies thrown at her. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the only other performance in that category, the supporting actress category, that I've seen was Emma Stone in Birdman, and she's great in that. And I remember even saying that. We saw Birdman together. I remember saying, like, when we walked out, or thinking it, that she was really, really amazing in that film.
Emma Stone is one of those people who I do think, such as these things go, she's got more awards in her future. I think Emma Stone is a fabulous actress and extremely charming, and I don't want to undersell that bit of it. You know, she was in that movie with Steve Carell. I keep wanting to call it Love Actually, but it wasn't called Love Actually.
Actually, it wasn't, Steve.
And
no, it's that thing with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, and she was great in that. Yeah. And like, I actually thought she was the best thing in that in the Spider-Man reboots.
You know who else was in that? Julianne Moore.
That's true. But Emma Stone is great, and it's a more dramatic performance, but she's fabulous in that. I mean, everybody in Birdman's fabulous.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really spectacular ensemble.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think she's going to win.
She's not going to win, but...
We haven't seen the Imitation Game, so we can't really count on Keira Knightley.
Seen her do good work. Yeah. I'm sure it's, you know, she's terrific, so...
I haven't seen Wild either, which I actually want to. I hear Wild is a pretty good film. Laura Dern, I'm curious because, you know, she plays the mother in that film, and it's all her scenes are more or less in flashback. That said, it's one of those movies where Laura Dern plays the mother of Reese Witherspoon, despite the fact that she, I believe, is exactly 8 years older than Reese Witherspoon. So that would have been a hard pregnancy, I'd imagine.
Wow. The history of cinema is ripe with that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So,
but yeah, I have not seen Wild. I will say Laura Dern is one of those people. You could argue how versatile she is, but I do enjoy Laura Dern. She takes chances.
Yeah, no, she's very good. She's very good, and I'm sure it's worth it. And I guess that takes us to the Best Director category. What do you think of that one?
This one's real interesting to me because there's two nominees who I think in any other year would be a slam dunk, but they're head-to-head, so it's kind of curious.
Yeah.
And those two nominees are Richard Linklater with Boyhood, which is... we and everyone else has discussed, is a pretty amazing achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Alejandro Iñárritu with Birdman, which Birdman was also, you know, it didn't take 12 years, but the logistics of Birdman are pretty damn impressive, especially because so much of it was shot in an actual theater. That, you know, there were some bits shot on stages, but they shot a lot of crazy, intricate things, you know, inside this theater. We've kind of discussed this before, Andre, but man, that generation of Mexican directors with Cuarón and him and Guillermo del Toro, those are some creative, innovative guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good batch of filmmakers. Something must have been in the water in Mexico at that time, you know, and
I hear there usually is something in the water in Mexico.
Well, that's what they say. Shouldn't
it worked out well?
Don't order
cinema.
Ice with your drinks. That's all I gotta say. But cinematically speaking, it seems to work. So that's good. And really, and I totally agree with you. I mean, this category really is between two guys. It's between Linklater for Boyhood and Iñárritu for Birdman. Bennett Miller from Foxcatcher. There's something missing from that film. And in that situation, I can't put my finger on it. I don't think you put your finger on it. I think a lot of people I talk to, they're like, it's good, yet there is something not happening there. And you have to point a finger at the director in that situation. That is the director's loss. So Bennett Miller is not getting it. Wes Anderson, Grand Budapest Hotel is wonderful. I loved it. One of my favorite films of the year. It's not going to win much. It may win some... you know, Art Direction Award, something along those lines. But Wes Anderson does what Wes Anderson does. I mean, he doesn't whip out any new tricks. He just kind of perfects what he does in Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who loved the Grand Budapest Hotel, there's an argument to be made that it is the most Wes Anderson-y of
Wes Anderson film. Yeah, it's the ultimate Wes Anderson film. Literally, he just creates a whole universe. He doesn't even bother with setting it in any degree of... the real world. You know, he just completely, it's a story within a story within a story. There's like four levels of reality to the whole thing. The biggest complaint I've heard about the movie is that it takes too long to start, because by the time you get to the third storyteller within the second story and so on and so forth, it's hard to like kind of get into what's happening, you know, but once you do, it's absolutely fine, you know, but he's not going to win.
And Morten Tidlum from The Imitation Game, you know, in Oscar parlance, thanks for coming, drinks are in the back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hope you have a nice night with your date. You will not be winning anything.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. He will not be winning that award, certainly. But, you know, it's certainly good for a first-time director to get nominated. He's not a first-time director, is he?
No.
Well, he's a younger director, and that's sort of what I mean. I mean, it's going to be a great career boost for him to get a nomination. I don't think he's going to win, clearly, because it would be insane if he did. That's all I got on that, you know?
Yeah.
So that sort of takes us back to the, you know, the best picture category, I suppose, unless you want to talk about costume design. Or
yeah, like I think we'll go with some of the, you know, I feel bad about this, that we're discussing the major awards and once again giving the shaft to the hardworking people and things like makeup and sound and that. But
well, God bless.
Nobody wants to hear us ramble on about all that. And we don't have, like, you know, for your Oscar pools, I'm afraid I don't have some insight on the best live-action short film that's going to propel you to the top.
Well, we don't get the screeners, Steve. We're not part of the Academy, so we don't get
to
see everything. Yeah.
Yeah,
it'd be great. I mean, we are certainly welcoming if anybody wants to provide screeners to Film Driven.
I mean, I feel like we're major trendsetters in the industry.
That's clearly, at least in this
voice.
City. But I mean, it's an interesting category. It's an interesting Best Picture.
Yeah, what's
race.
I mean, in the narrative of who's got momentum, you know, Boyhood is one of those movies that came out a long time ago. It came out in the summer. And to be honest, when it got nominated by so much, I was a little surprised. I wasn't quite sure if it was the type of movie that would resonate with the Academy. And, you know, people have joked that, you know, the idea that the guy who made Slacker is now making the rounds of all the Oscar shindigs, or people were kind of charmed and surprised by it.
Yeah.
So for a while, it seemed that everybody was like, yes, Boyhood is just going to sweep, not sweep, but it was going to win picture, director, supporting actress, maybe even screenplay. Now, I feel like Birdman kind of has the upper hand, and as such things go, Birdman has been winning a lot of these other picture awards that are often, you know, prognosticators of who's going to win.
Mm.
So what'll be really curious is if Birdman does win Best Picture, if they split it and give a director nod to Linklater.
That
or,
might happen.
Who knows?
That might very well happen, or vice versa. If Boyhood wins Best Picture, Inarritu may win Best Director.
Correct.
And that's exactly how it should be, incidentally. That's how they should reward both of these films, because both Birdman and Boyhood are innovative films. They are not your standard, like, this is a good movie. Like, if you want to see a good movie, you know, Whiplash is a really fucking good movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably my... maybe along with you is my favorite film of the year.
It's really great.
It's
and I mean, I'm kind of sad that director was not nominated because that's a very well-directed movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, both Birdman and Boyhood are really impressive, and you can, with those particular films, you know, more even than most movies, you can point to the directors of those movies as a large reason those movies are so good.
Those are directors' films, and they're both art films, and I respect that. I mean, an art film's in the best possible way. Not art films in terms of pretentiousness, but art films in terms of pushing the language of cinema. Both movies do that in ways that are both explicit, but also not too showy, you know? Both movies don't have this sort of look at how artsy we are vibe to them. They are down to earth. They can be viewed by a broad audience and enjoyed by a broad audience if given the chance. So really the race is between these two pictures. Nobody else really in that category has a chance. I mean, Whiplash is not going to win. Theory of Everything, I don't think, is going to win. When Selma has a certain political thing that may...
Yeah, I don't think it's enough to take it over the top.
I just don't think it's a good enough film for
that.
I think as an overall film, if Selma wins, it's going to be clearly a political statement. I think those things are a bit of a turnoff at the Academy Awards. You know, I think sometimes there's a convergence between the political statement and the artistry, and those movies deserve to win. But generally speaking, it's, you know, the Academy Awards... you know, the Academy is best left to stay out of the political arena.
Yeah, and similarly, I think that was, you know, there was some buzz about American Sniper. You know, American Sniper is a Clint Eastwood movie. The Academy for many years now is very in Clint Eastwood's corner.
Yeah, they love
and,
Clint Eastwood
because
they know him personally. Yeah. You know, Clint Eastwood's a good guy. Everybody likes working with him. They like him. They don't like his politics, and the American Sniper had this sort of a controversy.
That's where I was going with this, is that, you know, like...
It wasn't a controversy. It was whatever.
Rightly or wrongly, American Sniper in some quarters is viewed as at least a little bit of a right-wing film.
Yeah, it's viewed as right-wing propaganda. It is
not. Well, I'm not saying it is. I'm saying I think that you know, that with hobbles. The, I mean, bluntly, fairly, you know, Hollywood in general is a much more liberal than conservative town. And I think that when you open up the Best Picture thing, many, many, many people in that town are not going to vote a movie that they even kind of perceive as right-wing propaganda for Best Picture.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. And I think you know, when that stuff sort of rears its ugly head in the discourse, in the national discourse, that basically kills the movie's chances for
it
anything.
It sure does.
It happened with Zero Dark Thirty,
yep,
completely unfairly. It's definitely happening with this movie.
Yeah, Hollywood then, in recent years especially, tends to just run for the safety of something that's about, you know, movies, mm-hmm, or something. I mean, a case in point, I can't remember right now the other nominees, but there was that year, you know, within the past 5 years, the movie The Artist won Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know
about
you,
Andre. Another movie about movies.
Yes. And, you know, I liked The Artist. I would describe The Artist as like, oh, it's cute.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that
that's
is going to...
a novelty movie.
I think that personally is going to go down as one of the more questionable Best Picture nominees in, of all time, just because
Possibly. It's
this...
Well, Slumdog Millionaire?
Well, Slumdog Millionaire at least has... I don't know. It's got more interesting things going on for it to me than The Artist. Like, to me, The Artist is this 90-minute... It's not even really experimental. They just made, like, an old movie, but they made it now.
Yeah.
And it's 90 minutes, and it's charming. But, I mean, it tells you literally nothing new.
Yeah.
There's nothing new about it. And, I don't know.
Yeah, I
there's, I mean, there's a long list of movies that won Best Picture that I think are just flat out not very good.
Another thing I'm going to say about American Sniper, I think even a nomination for American Sniper is some kind of an amazing testament to the power of Clint Eastwood in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because even though I really like American Sniper, Steve, I thought it was a very good picture, it is not on the level of Best Picture nominee. Even with the 10 movie category, I just, you know, I don't know if maybe there was something else this year that I would have thrown in there besides American Sniper, but I don't think it's really on the level where it would win. So I think primarily it will lose for political reasons, but it should also lose because it's just a little all over the place and its structure is a little, I don't know, tentative. It's sort of slapped together. I think there were some issues in there where they were trying to find a balance of what part of Chris Kyle's life they were going to not show.
Yeah.
This is what it comes down to. So they really stuck to the Iraq thing and really, really sidestepped his post-Iraq adventures, quote-unquote, which are questionable and maybe, frankly, a product of a, you know, of an alcoholic, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder of some sort. You know?
Yeah, I always say that if American Sniper was about entirely about Chris Kyle's post-Iraq life, including you know, his book deal and you know, his murder at the shooting range,
mm-hmm,
that would have been more like the Werner Herzog movie.
I think it would have been a more interesting film.
I think
honestly.
So too.
Maybe
but,
there is an American Sniper 2 that's coming.
Oh.
I mean, I think that'd be cool because, frankly, I would love to see Chris Cooper in that role because I actually wanted more of Chris Cooper. Like, Chris Cooper is the best thing about American Sniper, and I'm actually down for American Sniper 2. I think that's actually
that'd be a Herzog
good idea.
Picture.
No. Just stay with Eastwood. Eastwood could do it too. It's just. You know, just a different, like, American Sniper 2. American Sniper at home. You know?
Even
and
snipier.
It starts, and he's like, it starts with him, like, playing, like, Call of Duty or something like that.
Ooh.
And just, like, the beginning with his kids, you know? So that's an idea, but you know, it's probably not going to happen.
So what do you think is going to win? Final verdict. What do you think is going to win Best Picture?
It's between Birdman and Boyhood. I'm just going to go with Boyhood. It's an arbitrary selection, but that's what I think is going to win.
I'm going with Birdman. I think it's going to win.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. Amazingly, I think there's a strong possibility I may not even be watching the telecast this year.
Oh, it's so sad.
It is sad. I know. And it's sad for me as well. But, you know, it looks like I'll be out of town working. So I'll probably catch some of it. I mean, it is on for 7.5 hours. I think I might be able to sneak a, you know, a few minutes in there.
Well, you'll have to scroll backwards through my witty Facebook.
Yes. Or maybe I'll just follow your Facebook posts.
Oh, that'll tell you what's going on. Yeah, between me and
absolutely.
Couple other folks. Yeah.
But looking forward to it, Steve. So that's all I got for
Oscar. Yeah, it's going to wrap up. So, yeah, enjoy the Oscars. This is Film Driven. And I don't know about you, Andre, but I'm ready to start talking about some 2015 films.
Definitely. Definitely ready. And so looking forward to that. Okay.
All right.
So we'll be back soon. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Askin.
This is Film Driven. Let's go.